When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And welcome to another podcast. It's FliesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us today, former State Representative Mandela Barnes, who, of course, is a Democrat from Milwaukee. Mandela, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sly, man. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Earlier this month, you announced that you are running for lieutenant governor. Lieutenant governor's interesting position in Wisconsin since 1970. Whoever is a lieutenant governor runs automatically with the gubernatorial candidate for each party in November. Previously, it was a position where you were elected on your own right. You were also the president of the Senate. That has long since changed. But the position has been interesting over the years in that many times the lieutenant governor has not been close to the governor. There's a field of 18 candidates. Do you feel pretty comfortable with that lineup that you could serve with whoever wins the nomination?
I do feel pretty comfortable because I do feel that there are some things that I offer to the ticket, both on the electoral side and on the side of governing. I've had experience as a former legislator, and the last year I've spent my time working for a policy organization, a national organization that does policy at the state working with state legislators. And whoever's elected governor, because I am sure it will be a Democrat, will need to have someone who understands how the legislature works, who has actual genuine relationships in the legislature. And, you know, I am very, you know, when it comes to the positions I take, I am very strong in the way that I advocate those issues, but I have still been able to maintain strong relationships on both on the other side of the aisle as well. And they understand where I'm coming from, and I try to understand where they're coming from in many instances. This is not always easy, but at the same time, there's a level of respect that exists.
Do you relish debating Rebecca Clayfish?
I'm happy to debate anyone in the primary, in the general. You know, it comes from that experience. It comes from actually running this campaign, leading with a vision. And that's how we have to not just run our elections, run our campaigns, but it's how we have to govern. We have to govern with a vision. And that's been the biggest criticism of Democrats for quite some time, not just here in Wisconsin, but all over the place. We have to know what we stand for. And, you know, if we can do that effectively, then we win. Then we connect with actual people.
You know, there's a real debate within the Democratic Party and Democratic leaders about what to stress publicly. And I have a very strong difference with many people in the Democratic Party and many legislators that won't talk about workers' rights. They don't think it tests well. They don't think it advances the ball down the court. They may even have a good record on workers' rights and restoring collective bargaining, but they don't want to talk about it. And they roll their eyes at me. And I really do not understand that after everything that happened. It's where I first met you in the battle, again, yeah. Even before you were in the legislature.
Years ago.
Fred Kessler introduced me to you at on the steps of the Capitol at a rally.
I remember.
That was such an important, iconic moment. You come from a labor family. What are your thoughts on that?
I do. You know, I say all the time, I would not be where I am today if it were not for, you know, organized labor. My mother, being a retired public school teacher, was very active in NTEA, and my father is still very much active as a UAW retiree. And, you know, I know what that meant. I know that it meant that if I was sick as a kid and my parents were able to stay home without fear of losing their job, it meant that, you know, they got, and the money that they were paid was commensurate to the work that they did. You know, they didn't, a lot of those questions that people who are, you know, not protected by collective bargaining agreements, a lot of the stressors that are added to their work environment translates to personal life and family life as well. And people in America shouldn't have to deal with that. We should, you know, expect equal pay. We should expect 5-day work week, 40-hour work week. And these are things that have been taken for granted for so long that people don't understand, you know, how we got to that point, what those struggles were to get us from where we were to where we are.
You know, I met your father a number of times, and I met him at a rally in the Fight for 15. I think it was at the McDonald's at 8th and North Avenue, if I'm not mistaken. How's that for a memory? I assume you agree with your father, Jesse, that raising the minimum wage to $15 is important.
Yeah, I do agree. 18 states raised the minimum wage January 1st this year. Their minimum wage increases went into effect. And unfortunately, Wisconsin was one of those states. And
we're way behind. We are way behind.
Well, we're way behind. It's proof that we have a governing majority. We have a governor who has no concern with increasing the economic reality of low-income people in this state. That's why we have a 12% rate of poverty statewide and even deeper in many pockets of the state.
Well, I want to talk to you about that because there are a lot of people that sort of when it comes to economics and poverty and wages, there was sort of a divide in the Democratic Party, at least the way the talking heads talked about it, between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And I have a strong disagreement with at least one host on MSNBC who would always characterize Bernie's message on opposing free trade and wages as a message to just white blue-collar workers. I don't think that's the way Bernie meant it at all. It seems to me that people living in poverty in Milwaukee have a lot in common with people living in northern Wisconsin where there are no jobs. It's a pretty similar argument to me, and I get frustrated with people trying to divide that.
Well, yeah, you just asked the 30th Street Corridor in Milwaukee.
That's right.
What trade has done. It's an area that was home to many middle class black people in the city, and once A.O. Smith left, that just started the descent, the downward spiral in that area. Property value.
Yeah, there used to be a car plant on Capitol Drive. A Walmart sits there now.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I guarantee you that Walmart doesn't pay what the wages were for the automotive workers.
I am very sure that Walmart does not pay anywhere near even today.
Right.
Even today.
So
which is the worst part about it.
So you've had a district on the north side of Milwaukee, although it was kind of a diverse district because it went into parts of Wauwatosa and Shorewood and that sort of thing, or at least you ran in a Senate district that was pretty diverse, Glendale. But
yep.
If you travel around the state, what's your sense? Have you started? What are you getting a feel for as you go around the state?
Oh, I've been around the state, and like right after the week I announced, I made my way up to Hudson to work on the special election and knock on some doors, make some phone calls, and turn out the vote. And you know, there is a real frustration. And like you said earlier, you know, poverty is poverty, whether you're in rural Wisconsin or an urban center. If you're doing bad, then you're doing bad. And chances are, you don't want to continue life that way. So with that said, people are very, very, very frustrated with, you know, one, the divide and conquer of a strategy that Scott Walker's employed, but two, the disparate impact on their lives that that this same strategy has caused. You know, and when people realize that, you know, they were being used for his presidential bid, and their lives have only gotten worse because of it, then they start to rethink what's going on or what's really important. Why should we keep this person in office?
Here is Mike Goucher from this past weekend on his Upfront program. Now, Mike plays it pretty much down the middle, but he noticed something about the governor's State of the State address. Here it is.
One thing Wisconsin politicians know is that a lot of folks who live in the state have no great love for Milwaukee. They think the city gets too much money and too much attention from state government. So there's not likely to be much gnashing of teeth over Governor Walker's State of the State address last Wednesday. On that day, in a 6,000-word speech that touted the historic strength of Wisconsin, Milwaukee was nowhere to be found. I read and watched the speech a second time just to be sure. There were success stories featuring people and businesses from Kenosha, La Crosse, Green Bay, Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, Black River Falls, Chippewa Falls, Waukesha, Woodville, and Keele, to name just a few. But no mention of Milwaukee, the home of Fortune 500 companies like Northwestern Mutual, thousands of new housing units, and billions of dollars in new private investment. While parts of the city still struggle, other neighborhoods are experiencing a renaissance. Some of that transformational work is being done by previously under and unemployed city residents who've been trained through innovative jobs programs. That's a success story that might have fit well in the governor's address, a story people in other parts of the state might not be aware of. But it wasn't mentioned. Milwaukee did get one indirect shout out from the governor, although the word Milwaukee was never uttered. The governor thanked Democratic State Representative Evan Goyke for his work on a plan to create new regional juvenile correction centers. And that was it. In an election year speech detailing Wisconsin's successes, the state's largest city, Milwaukee, went missing.
Pretty interesting. Scott Walker lived all of 8 blocks out of the city of Milwaukee most recently. Of course, now he just lives in the governor's mansion in Maple Bluff, which is quite
and
a distance from Milwaukee. That's right. He's worked in the city. What does this say to you?
This isn't the first time. I remember it was either my first or second State of the State address where I picked up on that, and I talked about how Milwaukee was notably absent. So I guess I honestly didn't even catch it because I didn't expect the governor to talk about Milwaukee, at least in any positive way. So this is not anything new. It's not a wavering part of his strategy. It's something that he has continued to push against. Milwaukee in the most adversarial way, and Madison in the most politically charged way, which is really wild because he says we don't need more Madison. Well, Madison has one of the better performing economies in the entire country.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Madison is so terrible that he sends his kids to college here, at least one of them. And the other moved here, and he and his wife essentially live in Madison. So it's kind of it's kind of funny, isn't it?
It's very funny. It's very yes, it is.
But again, it's that divide and conquer. So,
but you know, nobody should be surprised. It's how he's gotten as far as he has gotten.
You know, I don't want to paint a Pollyannish view of Tommy Thompson. I think a lot of his policies were very destructive. You know, he made a real effort in places like Milwaukee and in Dane County. He did not write them off. And, yeah, the welfare reform stuff was certainly playing to people's worst instincts. But he also, he did not use Milwaukee or Madison as a pejorative the way this governor did, certainly running against Tom Barrett.
Well, exactly. And, you know, Tommy Thompson won 71 of 72 counties. And Governor Walker cannot even, you know, imagine getting those sorts of numbers, nor does he want to achieve those sort of numbers. You know, the governor is just fine with winning 50% of the vote plus one, only wants to cater to a base that isn't excited anymore. And that's why you see Governor Walker talking about new welfare reforms, talking about, you know, new issues, going back to the classics. But people are tired of hearing that. And back to his classes, I could say.
You're talking about drug testing for people that...
Drug testing, back to the classic Ronald Reagan, back to the Ronald Reagan classes.
Mm-hmm.
But those aren't working because, you know, people who are working many more hours for much less money, that doesn't affect the money that's in their pockets. And it's an all-out attack on working people altogether, or people who are just trying to make it in Wisconsin. We've been... I don't understand how we have, you know, gone counter to the American dream here in the state. You know, people are trying, and we're doing everything we can as a state to stop them dead in their tracks.
We'll talk more with State Representative Mandela Barnes. He is candidate for Lieutenant Governor. for the Democratic nomination. Of course, that will become the primary is in August, the general election in November, right here at sliceoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Back to sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like our friends at S&R Remodeling, Madison Computer Works, and St. Vincent de Paul. Mandela Barnes, I want to ask you about ethics in the state. We've had one-party rule in Wisconsin since 2011. They blew up the Government Accountability Board, and recently the state Senate essentially voted to fire a couple people that had done nothing wrong, their career civil servants. I want you to listen to Scott Fitzgerald on the floor of the Senate the other day. I find this quite a remarkable statement.
It's unacceptable. And both of these individuals that are before us here today were there. Can I nail down exactly what they were part of and what they did and how much of it did they look away from, or were they complicit, or were they guilty of something criminal? I have no idea, but that's not what we're doing here. We're trying to judge if this body is comfortable. If each individual senator in this body is comfortable picking up the phone and calling over there for some straight advice about something related to ethics or elections.
Pretty remarkable, isn't it?
It's very remarkable and very dangerous. And, you know, I don't get the intensity at which they, you know, chose to go after those guys. And it makes you think, I should, like, take an investigation into what they have going on. You know, with the so intense, so gung-ho on getting rid of ethics commission administrators is very, very, very dangerous.
Well, you know, Michael Haas, I know Michael Haas, and there is not a more ethical person. And the fact that he doesn't think that those senators feel comfortable calling the elections board, well, I'm wondering what they're calling them about. Maybe there are things they don't want to hear.
Yeah, like, you know, the rules and regulations are in place for a reason. And, you know, this kind of move allows people like Senator Fitzgerald to go, you know, roughshod on ethics as a whole in this state and integrity as elected officials. That people who vote should come to, or not even just people who vote, anybody who lives in the state should come to expect from their government.
You know, the Republican Party has said that essentially you're not fit to hold public office. Do you want to respond to that?
Do they know their president?
they're taking this off an incident where you confronted Miles Kristen after he was harassing you. Do you know how many tapes there are of Republican legislators standing up to Miles, who has, you know, he obviously has some issues. You know, he is
We're
harassed.
Talking about a guy that poured beer on the speaker of the assembly.
Right.
He wasn't the speaker at that point.
Right.
But anybody, pour a beer on a person's head.
Right. So are you expecting a smear campaign from the Republican Party of Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. Sure.
What does that say?
Well, you know how that goes. It's the same ideology that, you know, has Donald Trump responding to Jay-Z and not Eminem on Twitter. If you can, you know, if you have an opportunity to paint somebody as scary, then of course, why wouldn't they take the opportunity? They didn't hesitate at all. I have not seen them say anything about any other candidate who was declared for lieutenant governor. And I don't know if they understand that, you know, their time is up once we as Democrats effectively engage communities of color, once we effectively engage people under the age of 35, and also engage in Milwaukee County in a more meaningful and effective way. You know, this is a, it's a, it's a tactic that they'd employ when, you know, they are very much concerned about how they'll fare in November.
When this past December, when now Senator Jones defeated Roy Moore, when Doug Jones defeated Roy Moore, and you see, when you saw in Alabama the African-American turnout and the fact that people actually were asked to get a, come out and vote in a state that had been labeled red, Democrats had completely, you know, given up in a state like that, and you saw people come out of the woodwork to vote against not only some, not only a pedophile, but a longtime racist. How did that make you feel about the prospects of people being motivated to vote in Wisconsin?
So I think that, you know, when deciding if I was going to run for lieutenant governor, Alabama election was, that was the thing for me. You know, I went to school in Alabama. My mother is originally from Birmingham. And so I spent a lot of time in that state. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that, you know, we could win in Alabama, I knew that we better win in Wisconsin. And if there's something I can do to make sure that that happens, if I can be an effective part of putting the state back into capable hands, then I'm gonna go for it.
And Doug Jones turns around and hires the first African American woman as a chief of staff on Capitol Hill in the Senate. Isn't that remarkable? That it took this
very long? Remarkable. a buddy of mine, a college classmate, he's the House Democratic leader in Alabama, also.
You know, it's just it's kind of amazing the Democratic Party sort of has given up on some areas, and they've played this game of, well, we're gonna hedge here a little and hedge there a little. What do you think that you can do as far as helping get the turnout up in areas that haven't voted in the past?
Well, that's the thing. You know, we actually have to engage in a meaningful way, and that means when it's not an election year.
So people, that starts now.
It starts now, but people want to know, you know, how can their lives actually be improved? You know, people don't see any benefit to getting out there and voting, which many haven't for a very long time. Then, one, they won't come out. Two, they won't come back out. And again, an issue like a very simple tangible, like raising the minimum wage, and not just because, you know, it plays well politically, but because it actually improves the economy, because it actually improves the lives of all working people. You know, this we got to get on the side of doing the right thing as a state. And they've had, you know, Governor Walker has had 8 years to prove that he is not willing to improve the lives of the majority of people of this state.
And to the governor's credit, he signed off on it. Is the deal for the new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks and the Marquette Golden Eagles, mm-hmm. is that agreement with the Milwaukee Bucks and the things and the promises that they've made on, you know, being union neutral and collective bargaining rights potentially for workers and paying a living wage and hiring people from zip codes close to the arena. Is that something you think that can be built off for future business in Wisconsin? Can that be a template? I know it was only a one-time deal for the Republicans because they absolutely needed Democratic votes on that one. You know, they went right back to, on the Foxconn deal, they went right back to their old playbook. But can that Bucks deal be that type of thing? Can that be a template for the future?
It has to be. It has to be. And any time that there are public dollars used in on a project, especially when it, you know, starts to exceed $1 million, then there has to be a significant, substantial public benefit. That means that people will be paid a living wage. That means that there is a project labor agreement. That means that there is a community benefits agreement to ensure that the people who live in that area are not negatively impacted by the project that takes place. So yes, it's you know, something that, you know, I researched even before being in the legislature as an organizer, just different models of a community benefits agreement, and there's many ways to do it, and they've been done across the country, and it has to continue to be done to make public-private partnerships work effectively, to make sure that we are being efficient with our use of tax dollars.
What are you hearing from people about Foxconn?
Not great things. Not great things. You get a little bit, even in Milwaukee, it's not popular, but once you start traveling a little more north and a little more west, it's definitely unpopular. And the governor is now coming around and talking to it, but he talks about it in a certain way. And if you listen to the State of the State address, he talked about Foxconn building. Foxconn is now here and it's building their, I think, $10 billion plant or whatever the number was. But he didn't talk about, the actual giveaway to Foxconn, the $3 billion that could have gone so many other places. And I talked to, I've been involved in a lot of young professional groups around the area, and a lot of these are people in the tech industry. A lot of them, have their own startups or are working to, build more startup activity. And the fact that we are dead last in new business startup activity in this state, while at the same time handing out over $3 billion, almost $4 billion, when you look at the local incentives, actually over $4 billion, and they start to question, why? It's just a simple why, because what they could have done, and with startup activity, with their new business startups, for far less, maybe even $100,000, we could have funded 30,000 new startups, by the way.
Well, and what about job retention? State Representative Dana Wachs, who's running for governor, said he wants to put somebody in his cabinet that will be in charge of job retention. A fraction of that money for Foxconn could have gone towards keeping some of these paper plants open in the Fox Valley.
Well, that's right. That's another thing.
Of course, those are union jobs. Walker's not so in a hurry to save union jobs.
It's all politics. He governs for the next election.
Yeah, that was quite the speech he gave the other day.
Yep.
Pretty remarkable. I almost thought there were parts of it, I almost thought Tony Earle was standing up there. I mean, it was amazing. He must know he's in trouble.
Yeah, if you'd have talked about the environment, then you'd have known something.
Well, that's another story for another day. If people want to help you, how do they go about reaching out to you?
My website is mandelabarnes.com. You can sign up to volunteer. You can donate. You can join our list of endorsers. Just stay up to date with what we've been doing. I also have my State of the State response on the first page, so feel free to check that out.
Great. Well, count me in. Mandela, I always like talking to you and look forward to seeing you be our first African-American lieutenant governor.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. This is SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.